My name's Bond. James Bond.
I know who you are, what you are, and why you have come. You have made a mistake. You will not succeed.
Rather a sweeping statement, considering we've never met.
Hello and welcome to ReggiesTake.com, podcast number 34. If you're a fan of the Bond movies, you're familiar with the actor who portrayed the British spy for the majority of the 1970s and half of the 1980s. James and I will take a look back at Roger Moore and his time as Bond. Plus, Warner Brothers announced that Zack Snyder has stepped away as the director of the Justice League movie, and an Avenger of sorts will step in to ensure its completion. Plus, Bill Maher blames the specific genre of movies for the election of the orange sphincter. Was Bill Maher really placing blame, or was the reference only used to make a point? Join my co-host James and myself as we share our thoughts and opinions. James, welcome.
Hello. How's it going, man?
I'm fine. How are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah, that's great. Kind of hate starting off podcasts this way for obvious reasons, but Roger Moore passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Most known for playing Bond, technically the third actor playing Bond, but I really look at him as more or less as the second one to really play it. I mean, since George Lazenby only did it one movie. What was your impression as Roger Moore as James Bond? I mean, everyone always compares everyone who ever plays Bond to Sean Connery's
team. Well, he wasn't as good as Sean Connery. I'll start with that. But one thing that I really liked about Roger Moore, not necessarily his Bond, but one thing I really liked about him was he was really the only Bond actor who kind of endured it and stuck with it. Everyone else, when it's done, well, for the most part, everyone else, be it Sean Connery or
Pierce Brosnan,
or even you're starting to see it with Daniel Craig, they're kind of like done with it,
push it away. They don't want to talk about it anymore, and he kind of embraced it.
Did forever. Every time there was a new Bond movie, you'd always get Roger Moore's 2 cents on it.
Uh-huh.
It was always kind of fun. He always seemed like he was kind of a jovial, I mean, obviously I didn't know him personally, you never know about these guys, but he always seemed like kind of a jovial kind of guy. So yeah, I mean, he'll definitely be missed. What's crazy about it though, now he was 89.
Right.
What's crazy about this is that he is the first Bond to die.
Right.
And that never happens. You think about it, usually somebody dies young or tragically. They're all alive, except for Roger Moore, obviously, but they're all living forever.
And I believe, I don't have it in front of me, but I believe Sean Connery is technically older than he is. He not?
That I don't know.
I don't know.
I
don't want to say he is or isn't.
Let's just look it up. We've got the Google phones. Let's see.
As a lot of people I've heard say that Roger Moore was their first Bond that they, you know, remember seeing.
Sean Connery is younger.
Really?
Yeah.
How old
is he? That's what I thought. 86.
86.
He's getting up there too.
Right. Not that losing anybody is more sad than the other, but I think when Connery, you know, he passes away, God forbid, you know, I think that's the one that everyone will make a really big deal over, just because of more or less his film career since then as well. I mean, not that Roger Moore didn't have success, but pretty much when he was done with Bond, he really didn't do much more than maybe a few cameos and, you know, this and that, but he didn't really do much. I think he spent more time doing what he did for UNICEF more than he did anything. He played in a couple TV series before he got Bond. His first break came in 1962 with The Saint.
Yes, that's what it's called.
And it ran for 7 years. And then he was in briefly in another TV series in 1971 that actually co-starred Tony Curtis.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That one I was not aware of, and that was called The Persuaders. And I kind of found that one funny because those two guys played characters of wisecracking millionaire playboys who were freelance secret agents. The next thing he got was James Bond in 73, so that was kind of a future telling of his future, so to speak. I don't know.
First Bond movie he did was Live and Let Die.
There's a son of a bitch I got! What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy. Well, we got a cage strong enough to hold an animal like you here.
Captain, would you enlighten the sheriff, please?
Yes, sir. J.W., let me have a word with you. J.W., now this fellow's from London, England. He's an Englishman working in cooperation with our boys, a sort of secret agent.
Secret agent? On whose side?
Actually, if you go by the books, that's actually the second book.
Really?
Yeah. But Live and Let Die has two other awesome things about it besides being the first Roger Moore. The theme song by Paul McCartney and Wings.
Right.
which is really good. And Paul McCartney and Wings, they're not the strongest band in the world. They've got some good songs. That song is amazing. That might be one of Paul McCartney's best songs ever.
That was like,
and then of course, oh, go ahead.
That was kind of like Paul McCartney and Wings was like his rebound sex with a band, so to speak.
Yeah, kind of.
After the Beatles.
Kind of, yeah. Then the other awesome thing about that movie is Jane Seymour.
Yes.
Who is gorgeous in that movie. She's still gorgeous.
She was in her early 20s when she did that.
Decades later. Yeah, she was. She really became one of the most successful Bond girls, if not the most. Well, Halle Berry's a weird one because she was already successful. That one was kind of a weird one.
I mean, Halle Berry, it was nice to see her in a Bond movie, but I wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of At World's End or whatever it is. World is Not Enough.
No, it's Die Another Day.
Is it Die Another Day?
Yeah.
That's right, Die Another Day.
That's one of the worst movies. It's not Halle Berry's fault or anything like that. It's just a really bad movie.
Definitely the worst of Pierce Brosnan.
It makes no sense. I will say, she and Pierce Brosnan were a really good match.
Yes, they...
But that's enough about her. We could literally talk about Halle Berry for 3 hours, so let's not go on that road.
Roger Moore did Live and Let Die in 73, and then they did The Man with the Golden Gun in 74.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically did two back-to-back. Mm-hmm. He did 7 in total.
More than anyone else.
Yeah, although if you want to count Sean Connery's...
It doesn't count.
I know it
okay,
doesn't...
it sort of counts.
I know it doesn't technically count as far as...
I guess it is technically about
Bond.
James
so the way I look at it is those two played Bond the most.
Yeah.
You know, never say never for Connery. Okay, it may be not officially a Bond movie, but I like that movie. I always have.
It's not a terrible movie.
No, it's not.
It's not a great movie, but it's not terrible.
But it was nice to see him playing an older Bond. I kind of like that they did it. But The Spy Who Loved Me saw Jaws. I think Jaws is one of the best villains during Roger Moore's era.
And actually that's...
Or henchman is what you want to call it.
Oh, by far. And actually I would say that is Roger Moore's best movie, is The Spy Who Loved Me.
Right.
And it's one of the best ones in the series.
And then you got Moonraker, which wasn't really initially supposed to be happening, because if you watch the end of Spy Who Loved Me and the end of Moonraker, both movies say James Bond will return in For Your Eyes Only, which is...
Yeah. Well, they wanted to do Moonraker because of Star Wars.
And
here's the deal, though. The book is nothing like that. The book, the Moonraker is just, it's a rocket. It's a missile. No one goes to space in the book. It's certainly the dumbest. Well,
it's a watchable Bond.
Die Another Day is... that one might actually be dumber than Moonraker. That's the only one that might be.
What
about DNA transplant?
What about,
like, that is so stupid.
What about Diamonds Are Forever?
That movie's not dumb. It just sucks.
Okay.
It's got a feasible plot. It's just really terribly made and awful. I really don't like Moonraker either. I think it's just way too dumb.
And it's probably got one of the worst lines at the end of that movie where Dr. Goodhead says, "Oh, James, take me around the world one more time," and they're still up in the shuttle.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And by the way, Dr. Goodhead, are you even trying anymore?
That's such a blatant name to give a female character in a Bond movie.
Yeah.
And I recently just watched Live and Let Die and For Your Eyes Only. For Your Eyes Only, for me, is probably one of my favorite of the Roger Moore. Because it came after Moonraker, and it seemed really grounded compared to what Moonraker was.
Oh, it totally is.
It's so well grounded that, for some reason, I enjoy that movie with Roger Moore.
For Your Eyes Only is just a good, solid movie. It doesn't break any ground or anything.
There's nothing in there that will make you go, wow.
But it's a solid movie.
And, of course, then there's Octopussy.
Really? Really?
I like it for what it is. I enjoy it.
Pile of crap. That one is like the worst. I'll take Moonraker over Octopussy.
See, I don't like A View to a Kill that well. I'm not a fan of View to a Kill.
I love A View to a Kill. And I'll admit that I might be wrong on that, because it has the lowest rating on Rotten Tomatoes out of any Bond movie, which I think is totally unfair. But I really like A View to a Kill. I like the weird Duran Duran song at the beginning. I like Christopher Walken's
I think that's part of the reason why I don't like...
Yeah, he's like too evil.
Like A View to a Kill, because... Something about Christopher Walken, he may be the nicest guy in real life, and that's fine.
Well, in this movie, he's like a serial killer.
Right, like KGB and all this.
Well,
other...
like, remember when he's gunning down all his own henchmen in the mines?
Yes.
Like, his own guys, he just starts mowing them down and laughing. And then at the end, man, I really like this movie. I know it's wrong. It's so wrong, but it feels so right. When they fall out of the Zeppelin and are fighting on the Golden Gate
bridge. Yes. He's got that axe. What is this? This is like way too intense and weird for a James Bond movie, but I like it. I also like Mayday. And
Grace
even
Jones.
Mayday, yeah, Grace Jones, even like her death scene is really messed up.
Her death scene, though, is more of a redemption for her character.
It is, but it's just like really dark. That whole movie is just way too dark for a James Bond movie, but that's what I like about it. The Bond girl is Donna's mom from That 70s Show. I can't think of her name. Who I love on That 70s Show, but I don't think she was a spectacular Bond girl, but I don't think it was necessarily her fault. I don't think she had a very good part written. She's just kind of like a typical, like, oh, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Other than that, and the fact that Roger Moore, who was old then, just died at 89. He was too old when this movie came out.
He was in his late 50s then.
Yeah.
Because he got the role of Bond, I read, at age 46.
And back in the 80s, I don't know what it is now. People age better now than they did.
Yeah.
If you were in your 50s, you looked old.
Well, to me, besides Christopher Walken, Roger Moore seemed to look like he just kind of walked his way through that movie. He didn't. He was giving his Bond performance, but at the same time, it looked like he was just almost, I don't want to say phoning it in per se, but he just, I don't know. He seemed like he knew this
maybe
was his last one.
Maybe a little bit. He didn't do it as bad as Sean Connery did through Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Sean Connery was drunk for the entire movie. Drunk and tired and like half asleep.
Because I also have a problem with Batman Returns that has Christopher Walken. And I just, anything Christopher Walken in, he pretty much drives me nuts.
Really? It's not that I don't like him in Batman Returns. It's just like, why is he there? Why is there a third villain in this movie when two is more than enough, and this new one isn't even from the comics, so who is he? So you can't even market him, so what's the point?
Really, to me, Christopher Walken's character in Batman Returns is nothing more than to set up Catwoman. Only reason why he's there.
Which would have been fine if they would have dropped it at that.
Right.
Actually, what they should have done, drop the whole Penguin thing, drop the whole Max Schreck thing. Actually, they could have kept Max Schreck, and it would have worked if the villain, besides him, were Catwoman and Two-Face, like it was supposed to be. Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face. You could actually see Catwoman and Two-Face joining together to stop some corrupt multimillionaire bad guy, but because Catwoman and Two-Face are insane, they're just as evil as he is. They're just twisted about what they're doing.
Right.
That would have been a good movie. I like to imagine that there's another universe where Batman Returns is that. The third one had the Penguin, and it's still got a Michael Keaton and Tim Burton. You know, I don't know what universe that would be. Probably a better one.
Yeah.
Actually, no, it wouldn't be, because in that universe, as cool as that would be, there probably wouldn't be a Christian Bale Batman series.
True. Sean Connery weighed in on the passing of Roger Moore. He said, "I was very sad to hear of Roger's passing. We had an unusually long relationship by Hollywood standards that was filled with jokes and laughter. I will miss him." The Bond producers, Michael G. Wilson and Barbara Broccoli, they said, "We are heartbroken at the news of Sir Roger Moore's passing. On screen, he reinvented the role of James Bond with tremendous skill, charisma, and humor. In real life, he was a genuine hero working as a UNICEF Goodwill ambassador for many years, dedicating his life to alleviating the suffering of children all over the world. He was a loyal, beloved friend, and his legacy shall live on through his films and the millions of lives he touched. We shall miss him enormously." Jane Seymour, who you mentioned just not too long ago, she wrote probably the most touching one in my book, but she put, "The first leading role I ever had as a Bond girl was such a new and frightening world, and Roger held my hand and guided me through every process. He taught me about work ethic and humility. He was so funny, kind, and thoughtful to everyone around him. And in that, Roger taught me what a movie star really was and should be. Through his lifelong work with UNICEF, he showed me the true meaning of being a humanitarian and giving back. He was my Bond." Pierce Brosnan also weighed in. And I think this is great. All these past Bonds have, you know, were chiming in. He actually more or less wrote a, quote, letter to Roger Moore on his Facebook page saying, "Dear Sir Roger Moore, it is indeed with a heavy heart that I hear the news of your passing this morning. You were a big part of my life, from the Saint to James Bond. You were a magnificent James Bond and one that led the way for me. The world will miss you and your unique sense of humor for years to come. My sincerest condolences to you and your children." And the last one I have here is from Pinewood Studios, which I kind of found a little humorous, which there's nothing wrong with that. "It is with great sadness that Pinewood learns of the passing of Sir Roger Moore. He has kept an office at the studio since 1970, and he is officially one of our longest standing finding residents. He joked once recently that he did still make it a point to come in whenever I can to do a little light dusting and hoovering. Sir Roger was a force of nature, and his humor was amazing. His spirit will be missed by all of us. So he got a ton of sympathy and support for his family, and the fact that, you know, everyone's going to miss him.
You know, one thing I want to point out, even though Connery may be the standard, Roger Moore, they added
a little lightheartedness to it.
Well, they kind of, yeah, okay, so he might be the, they kind of, in a way, that's where they really came up with a lot of the formulas. I mean, I know the formula was more or less complete with Goldfinger, with the third James Bond movie, but a little bit more was added to the formula with Roger Moore. There was usually, or they set the formula in stone, I should say. I mean, every movie from then on just about has had a henchman. There's always, like,
the main villain.
Yeah.
And a Bond girl of some sort.
Yeah, it's just, those things were all there with Connery, but with the Moore movies, that's when it became more or less official. This is how you make these movies.
Right. So. Roger Moore in real life actually hated guns.
Yeah.
And so that way, most time you see him firing a gun, either they quickly cut away, or it's usually from behind, because he always kept closing his eyes and they never could get him to keep his eyes open when he fired the gun. And his remark once about that was, "Of course, I do not regret the Bond days. I regret that sadly heroes in general are depicted with guns in their hands. And to tell the truth, I've always hated guns and what they represent." Even though he played a guy who used a gun to kill, he doesn't regret playing the character. It's just in real life, he poses guns.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's entitled to their own opinions and stands on things in life.
Sure.
So.
Absolutely.
And he did a lot of work for children. He will be missed.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder, I'm sure you've probably heard that a family tragedy, his daughter committed suicide back in March. He was going to keep it quiet and just continue on working, but
this happened in March.
This happened in March.
That long ago.
That long ago. Wow. They didn't say how she committed suicide, and really, that's none of our business. No, you know, that's for that family. But Zack Snyder stepped away from directing the rest of Justice League. Not that there's a lot to do, but still. And also, his wife has walked away from the project. As I said, Snyder's daughter committed suicide in March, and they decided it was time. They just needed to walk away from making movies and focus on their family, which I applaud them for.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, there was planned reshoots for already in the summer. These were set long before daughter's tragedy. They've got Joss Whedon to come in, who obviously also recently was signed on to direct the Batgirl movie, but he will now come in and oversee the rest of the post-production and the direct the reshoots for the Justice League movie and putting together the final product. That's an interesting and sad situation in all sense. Zack Snyder did say in a quote with an interview briefly with somebody, he said, "Here's the thing. I never planned to make this public. I thought it would just be in the family, a private matter, our private sorrow that we would deal with. When it became obvious that I needed to take a break, I knew there would be narratives created on the internet. They'll do what they do. The truth is, I'm past caring about that kind of thing now. I want the movie to be amazing and I'm a fan. But that all pales pretty quickly in comparison. I know the fans are going to be worried about the movie, but there are 7 other kids that need me. In the end, it's just a movie. It's a great movie, but it's just a movie." You have to applaud a guy who's being paid that much money to make really kind of almost a certain sense of pivotal movie for the DCEU and saying, you know, my family comes first. And I was also gracious that Warner Brothers has also just said, you know, go take care of yourself. Any thoughts on Joss Whedon taking over? I mean, obviously he's got the chops to do it with 2 Avengers movies.
Yeah.
I know it's really not kind of hard to really talk about someone's tragedy like that. I just felt it's kind of worth mentioning, you know, that there
the
is
whole thing's just weird.
Yeah.
I don't really want to get into it.
Anyway, it's sad for Zack Snyder and his family, so best of luck to him.
Absolutely.
Our last little topic on today's podcast, and this is kind of a shorter podcast than normal for us, but for good reasons. Bill Maher, on his television show, Real Time with Bill Maher, has blamed superhero movies for causing the election of Donald Trump as president. Now, you said before we started that you actually saw that episode.
Yeah, actually, I actually do watch his show pretty much weekly.
So, my first thought, I wasn't sure if he was really being serious, because I have not seen the episode. I've only read...
No, he was being Bill Maher.
Okay.
He was being an asshole, basically. Like, that's what he does. And, you know, well, go on, go on.
No, no, you go ahead. You can continue
well,
your
it's,
thought.
It's one thing that I like about him. One of the reasons why I like watching his show and one thing that I like about him is sometimes I agree with him and sometimes I don't. The fact of the matter is he's kind of a dumbass that just says whatever he feels like saying.
He speaks his mind.
What makes it good is on his show he has people from all opinions and all walks of life on, and they actually have conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he might be a dumbass, or he might be right, and the guy that he has on as his guest might be a lunatic. Usually, there's at least one smart guy on the show. But that's what I like about his show, is that I think was the reason why Larry Wilmore's show, who Larry Wilmore is actually not only smarter than Bill Maher, but also funnier than Bill Maher.
Okay.
But I think that's why his show failed, was because his panel, his roundtable of guests, were usually just his writers bobbling their heads back and forth, agreeing with each other. And, you know, they might have one guy that they all disagree with. And it's like, this is the same crap that you see on these Fox News shows that everyone is bashing. It's the same idea. So that's why I like Bill's show, because as awful as he is sometimes, he lets everyone talk. And doesn't matter how wrong you are, you get to talk and you get to hear other people's opinions. And that's really important.
Right.
You don't get that anymore. And there was a time when you got that, but you don't get that anymore. And people don't allow to hear other people's opinions. Sometimes you have to listen. And I think sometimes we have to listen to people, no matter how awful or vile their opinion is. We have to listen to them, because when you actually do listen to them, you kind of figure them out. And that's important.
Yeah.
Rather than being afraid of them or whatever. So, like, he made fun of superheroes. He makes fun of something that everybody loves at the end of every episode that he does. There's always something. It was pretty funny. You actually took the time to put some quotes down, so let's go ahead and
hear them. The one that got me to actually talk about this, which is the first one I'll read, which is the one that kind of made more of the rounds on the internet, was, if you're asking what's the problem is that superhero movies imprint this mindset that we are not masters of our own destiny, and the best we can do is sit back and wait for Star-Lord and a fucking raccoon to sweep in and save our sorry asses. We just need a hero to rise, and so we put out the bat signal for one man who could step in and solve all of our problems very quickly. And that's how we got our latest superhero, Orange Sphincter.
I wonder who he's talking
about. Yeah, I have no clue.
You know, there is a little bit of truth to that. This has always been kind of the problem with the superhero movies, is if you ever notice, even on the ones where they try not to be this way, like The Dark Knight or Batman Begins, but which really tried not to be this way, but it still was, the institutions are all failed. The police suck.
The government
is just out of control. EMTs, even emergency personnel, EMTs and fire trucks, they can't stop the fire. You know, I mean, right. Like, I don't think there's any hidden message behind it. It's just kind of the formula that works for 2.5 hours. And I have noticed that over the years. It is always funny when you watch them, because, I mean, the police aren't the stars of the movie. The mayor isn't the star of these movies. When you do pay attention to these movies, it is funny, because, like, everyone, doesn't matter whether you're part of an institution or just a regular old citizen, everyone in these movies just complete and utterly sucks at everything, and they need to be saved all the time.
Well, it's kind of like the old Batman television series.
Yeah.
The police couldn't solve anything. It was always left to Batman and Robin.
That's an extreme example, but yeah, the movies, they try not to be that way, but they still are. And that's really just because of the formula of, do you really want to see the police doing a good job, or do you want to see Batman kick some butt? Which one do you want to see? There definitely is a point to that. The whole thing was just to set up his bit for the Orange Sphincter, but...
Well, I also found this other stuff, and I'm sure it probably came from the show, but I found it real hilarious, because he gives these different politicians and kind of names them for who he says they are.
Yeah.
And quipped with his power smirk and golden helmet, Orange Sphincter hails from the planet A-Hole with his faithful allies, Boy Wonder, Paul Ryan, and Stingy Mutant Turtle, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
He also has his own version.
Stingy Mutant Turtle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Stingy Mutant. I'm sorry. And Stingy Mutant Turtle, Mitch McConnell. He also has his own version of Batman's butler, Alfred Pennyworth, in the form of Captain Buzzkill, Vice President Mike Pence,
yeah.
as well as a nemesis, Crooked Hillary, and her sidekick, Private Server. That cracked me up.
And when they showed Crooked Hillary, they just looped video of her laughing, but they made it sound menacing.
Like,
Crooked Hillary
yeah.
and Private Server.
Yeah. Like Batman, Orange Sphincter is a billionaire socialite from Gotham. Like Superman, he has a red cape, but wears it in the front.
That's supposed to be his tie.
Yeah, okay. Like Aquaman, he can communicate with whales, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one. Yeah.
And bird. Like Spider-Man, he has a spidey sense that allows him to see things that other people cannot, mocking Trump for his statements about the crowd size of his inauguration ceremony. So how does this superhero story end? What is the fate of Orange Sphincter? Well, this one is a little bit trickier because in this one, the superhero is the villain, and that should make us all remember that in this fight for America, we need to be our own superheroes.
Yeah. The whole bit was really funny. If you have HBO Go, you can look it up. It was actually a really funny bit. I really enjoyed it.
It just happened to catch my attention, and at first I wasn't sure, okay, is he really being serious?
No.
Is he being Bill Maher? Or is he just being funny to prove a point?
The whole thing was just to push the Orange Sphincter joke. I forgot about the Aquaman communicating to whales thing and has him talking to big old fat
Chris Christie.
That guy's so gross. Ugh, I can't even look at him. Oh, man.
Any comments or last thoughts about anything we talked today?
I think so on this one, other than, you know, it's sad that we lost Roger Moore, but I mean, at the same time, he was 89. It's sad that we lost him, but, you know, I don't view it as a sad death. I view it as passing.
And according to his family, he's going to have a private ceremony, funeral in Monaco. Is where
really
so wow. I find that unique that he's being buried in Monaco.
Yeah,
if that's what his wish was, then
yep.
yeah, so be it.
Going back to the I don't know if I want to end on this note, but going back to the Zack Snyder thing, something like this, I mean, the fact of the matter is, I felt the same thing when I read it. It's just a dumb movie, okay? I mean, and I know we haven't exactly been the nicest to him.
Haven't been the nicest to him.
I haven't really liked his movies the way he's done them, but the shit doesn't matter. They're just movies. I do hope that he makes it through this.
Anyway, as always, you can find James's links to True Believers on my website. Registech.com, as well as me on Registech.com. Plus, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. Find my podcast on YouTube and Podomatic. And we will be back with a special podcast, number 35. So we look to talk to you next time, and keep listening. We'll talk at you later.
007, triple X.
Bond, what do you think you're doing?
Keeping the British end up, sir.
Nobody does.